Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Simon Tierney's back with us once again to discuss this week an extremely significant invention of the 1800s. I speak, of course, of the crisp. Good afternoon, Simon.
Afternoon, Sean.
And I suppose a major source of transatlantic tension, if it isn't enough, isn't there already, but will increase probably, is over who invented the crisp. Did Donald Trump invent the crisp?
Yeah, I mean, this was really the Brexit of the 19th century. I mean, you know, who invented the crisp? Was it the Americans or was it the British? Well, we can reveal today, live on the Moncrief Show, that the inventor was an American by the name of George Crumb, which I quite like. Crumb is kind of, you know,
yes, but yeah. C-R-U-M, there was no B there.
No, yeah. No B.
Okay.
And he invented it in 1853. But I suppose what I always wondered, I was in the States recently during the summer, and they call them chips over there.
Potato chips, yeah.
Yeah. So why do we call them crisps and they call them chips? So basically, it took me a little while to figure this one out, but the chip means, like, if you were looking for a dictionary definition, it means a slice of fruit or vegetable. So the potato fry, so to speak, arrived in America before the crisp that we would call it.
Mm.
So they called it a chip because it's a slice of vegetable. When the fried potatoes arrived from Europe to the States, they called them German fries because they originally came from Germany. During the First World War, they were part of the Allied side. The Germans were on the other side, so they started calling them French fries instead.
That is so ironic in terms of later events when they stopped calling them French
fries. Exactly. Then they became Freedom Fries or whatever post the Iraq invasion in 03. But then on the other side of the Atlantic, in Britain and Ireland, the potato chip, as in fish and chips, that was invented first in the 19th century, and we actually inherited the crisp from the States not until the 1920s. So we were like, okay, well, we can't call these things chips because we already have chips, which are hot and they come in a brown paper bag. So we're going to call them crisps.
Why was there some dispute about it, though? Why did the Brits think that they perhaps might have invented the crisp?
Okay, so, yeah, that's a good question. There is a guy who we have documentary evidence of a recipe published in the 1820s, a Dr. William Kitchener, who gives a recipe for, like, something that is really very close to what a crisp is. But I decided that I don't think that's good enough material to warrant that the Brits actually invented the crisp, because it's displayed like a dinner dish, you know, that you actually sit down with a knife and fork and eat these kind of rolls of thin potato skins that are, you know, fried in kind of oil and butter and with a bit of salt on them. I'm like, that is not exactly the modern crisp. So I'm going to go with the Yanks.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us about the circumstances of the invention of George Crumb's invention.
Okay. So
what was his background?
Yeah. So George Crumb was an African American man. He was a chef in a restaurant in upstate New York, I think, Saratoga Springs. And he had a guest in one day, a diner, who kept sending back the potatoes that he was served. He had asked for fried potatoes. He said that they weren't thin enough, they were too thickly cut, and they weren't crispy enough. They kept sending them back to George in the kitchen. George was like, right, I'm going to show this guy a lesson. I'm going to cut them as thinly as I possibly can. I'm going to fry them, flash fry them, and then I'm going to put a rake of salt on them, make them really greasy and crunchy. Sent them back. Your man absolutely loved them. Told everyone, guys, go to this guy's joint up in Saratoga Springs. They become the Saratoga chip, famous across the United States in the mid-19th century. And that's how it was born.
Ah, right. So did George himself benefit financially from the invention of the crisp, or did somebody just steal it off him?
He didn't. I was wondering, I actually had to Google earlier, can you patent food? But you can patent food, like Oreo, things like that. They're patented. You can't just copy them. But George, unfortunately, didn't make any money out of his invention, because at that time in the mid-19th century, in fact, this was before the Civil War, black people, unfortunately, weren't allowed to file for patents. Very unfair.
Word. Yeah. Wow. Okay, that's barbaric, really. So who stole essentially crisps from George and started to make money out of it?
Yeah, so until the rest of the 19th century and indeed into the early part of the 20th century, crisps manufacturing, it remained very much a cottage, kind of an amateur cottage industry. And it wasn't until a man called Frank Smith, you don't really see these anymore, I think they were taken over by Walkers, but he set up a company making crisps in 1920 in London, basically from his garage in North London, in Cricklewood. And Mrs. Smith washed and cut and fried the potatoes, and then he went around North London in his pony and trap, bringing them up to pubs in the area, because pub landlords realised that the sort of dehydrating qualities of salty crisps made people drink more beer.
Yeah.
So what were these crisps like? And indeed, beer crisps generally in the 1920s, 1930s and 1940s, they were there was only one flavour. They were salted crisps. Frank Smith's crisps, they were called Salt and Shake. So you open the packet, came in a greaseproof packet, and there was a little blue sachet.
Yeah,
sachet.
I'm old enough to remember that.
I thought you were going to say that. And you untwisted this blue sachet, and you sprinkled the salt, and then you gave the bag good old shake, and that was your Salt and Shake. But then something universal, something amazing happened to change the crisp forever. One of the great pioneers of 20th century crisp making came from this very city.
Okay.
Joe Spud Murphy.
Right.
And he changed the crisp landscape forever.
Right.
What did he do? He introduced the first non-salted crisp in the world. That's actually a bit of a misnomer. There was a lot of salt in this recipe, but it wasn't just salt. He invented the world's first cheese and onion crisp.
Ah, right.
When he launched Tatum's in 1954. Joe Spud Murphy, who I'm sure a lot of listeners will remember, he only died, I believe, in 2001. He was a great Irish entrepreneur. He was fed up with these kind of insipid flavours, the lack of choice on the crisp market. And he was like, okay, can we distill the notion, the very idea of cheese and onion down to its very essence and just sprinkle it on crisps and then sell them?
I wonder why he chose cheese and onion in a vast range of various flavours.
Really good philosophical question.
Yeah.
Why cheese and onion? Why those two things together? I think it was probably because cheese and onion sandwiches were really popular at the time.
Okay.
They were a cheap way of having a kind of a tasty sandwich. There was no meat in them, so they were less expensive. And, you know, okay, can we make that into a crisp form?
Okay, that's a very good answer. Now, World War II, what kind of effect did that have on the crisp trade in general?
Yeah, World War II is an interesting one. It tends to pop up in this slot a lot as kind of having a major effect on these pedestrian inventions. But during World War II, rationing didn't concern potatoes. They were unaffected by the rationing laws in Britain. I don't know what the case was in Ireland, perhaps similar, but it meant that they used to pack off loads of boxes of crisps off to the troops, Allied troops, like everywhere across Europe. Also, it meant that butchers started getting involved in the chip or in the crisp trade, particularly one Mr. Henry Walker. In 1949, rationing was still taking place in London in the post-war period. And because there was so little meat available, he found himself in his shop on Oxford Street that all his meat products were gone by like 10 a.m. in the morning because there was so little to sell and everyone ran in and got stuff off the shelves. He was like, OK, what can I do with my premises in order to offset my losses, make a bit of profit here? Crisps are really cheap to make. The profit margin is actually quite high. So he starts making crisps in 1949, Walker's Crisps, perhaps one of the most successful brands of crisps in the world today. And it all started on Oxford Street in 1949.
Meanwhile, Mr. Murphy's doing his stuff in Dublin, inventing cheese and onion. Did he manage to retain the copyright, the patent on cheese and onion crisps?
Definitely not. It went global.
Ah.
Yeah. Imagine if it did. This is why I think people expats, they get nostalgic for Tato's. Unfortunately, you can't always find them abroad.
Yeah, and it's funny. Jerry, for instance, says, am I the only person who calls every variety of crisp Tato's, no matter the brand? I love me Hunky Dory's Tato's and the buffalo flavour. Not a fan of the Walker's Tato's. You should do a crispometer test to find out the best Tato's in Ireland. I'll offer myself up for any and all tasting required. Thank you, Jerry. That's very selfless of you. Yeah, we just think of Tato as...
Yeah, yeah.
Crisp as Tato.
Yeah, so many people just call NEL crisp potatoes.
From that point on, have there been any other significant milestones in the story of the crisp?
Well, I was thinking of the Pringle, is a kind of a world-changing event in the late 1960s in the States, because this was the first time where someone was like, okay, is there a way to make a uniform crisp where every crisp looks the exact same?
Yeah.
You know, normal crisps, they're like snowflakes. They're so unique. You know, there's no one Tato that's the same as the next. But Pringles, so what they did was they took a load of dehydrated potato kind of chips or whatever, flakes is the word, mixed it with a load of water and starch, and then they were able to make a dough, and then they were able to cut these perfect saddle-shaped crisps. Why are they saddle-shaped? Because people were complaining at the time about three things. The crisps don't stay in one place, so they're all over the shop.
Yeah, yeah.
They are greasy on my fingers and they break up in the packet. And then you've got all this crisp dust at the bottom of the bag. Mm. So they were like, okay, let's stack them. So how can we stack them so that they don't fall around?
I see.
Saddle shape.
Yeah.
They can't really move in the tubular box. And this was all down to a chemist that Procter & Gamble hired called Frank Baur. And he came up with the Pringle. Now, of course, it's one of the biggest selling kind of processed food products in the world. But Frank Baur was such a fan of his invention that when he died, I think it was only 2008 that he died, he was buried. He wasn't buried. His ashes were buried in a tube of Pringles. No lie.
Yeah. You'd wonder, like, all the worms and stuff, when they set about eating them, they go, ooh, Pringles. Mm. And then they leave him for a while. Those crisps which you salt yourself are available in the north still. They're called salt and shake, says
Andy.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant.
I didn't know that. Miko says, I've eaten crisps in years. Now it's all I want. A fair few people saying they have a go in them now for some time. I must say, I don't like the Pringle. A Pringle's pleasant enough. Mm. But it misses the point of a crisp.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's too perfect.
Yeah.
That the point of a crisp is you put your hand in the bag and you don't know what's going to come out.
Exactly.
And that you have to empty the little small bits down your throat.
And I like the greasiness of an old traditional packet of crisps.
Luke says the dust at the end of a packet of crisps is the best part. I've been known to squish up my bag of crisps, have extra dust at the end.
That's Everyone has their own way of doing it.
Simon, that was fascinating. Thanks, man, for coming into us. Simon Tierney there. We're going to take a break. After that, the world's smelliest fruit.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.